This is Audible.
The Way of Shadows by Brent Weeks. Narrated by Paul Bamer. Copyright 2008 by Brent Weeks. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Orbit, a division of Little Brown Book Group Limited, and was produced in the year 2009 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Chapter 1. Azoth squatted in the alley, cold mud squishing through his bare toes. He stared at the narrow space beneath the wall, trying to get up his nerve. The sun wouldn't come up for hours, and the tavern was empty. Most taverns in the city had dirt floors, but this part of the Warrens had been built over marshland, and not even drunks wanted to drink standing ankle-deep in mud. So the taverns had been raised a few inches on stilts and floored with stout bamboo poles. Coins sometimes dropped through the gaps in the bamboo, and the crawl space was too small for most people to go after them. The guild's bigs were too big, and the littles were too scared to squeeze into the suffocating darkness shared with spiders and cockroaches and rats and the wicked, half-wild tomcat the owner kept. Worst was the pressure of the bamboo against your back, flattening you every time a patron walked overhead. It had been Azoth's favorite spot for a year, but he wasn't as small as he used to be. Last time, he got stuck and spent hours panicking until it rained and the ground softened beneath him enough that he could dig himself out. It was muddy now, and there would be no patrons, and Azoth had seen the tomcat leave. It should be fine. Besides, Rat was collecting guild dues tomorrow, and Azoth didn't have 4 coppers. He didn't even have 1, so there wasn't much choice. Rat wasn't understanding, and he didn't know his own strength. Littles had died from his beatings. Pushing aside mounds of mud, Azoth lay on his stomach. The dank earth soaked his thin, filthy tunic instantly. He'd have to work fast. He was skinny, and if he caught a chill, the odds of getting better weren't good. Scooting through the darkness, he began searching for the telltale metallic gleam. A couple of lamps were still burning in the tavern, so light filtered through the gaps, illuminating the mud and standing water in strange rectangles. Heavy marsh mist climbed the shafts of light, only to fall over and over again. Spider webs draped across Azoth's face and broke, and he felt a tingle on the back of his neck. He froze. No, it was his imagination. He exhaled slowly. Something glimmered, and he grabbed his first copper. He slithered to the unfinished pine beam he had gotten stuck under last time and shoveled mud away until water filled the depression. The gap was still so narrow that he had to turn his head sideways to squeeze underneath it. Holding his breath and pushing his face into the slimy water, he began the slow crawl. His head and shoulders made it through, but then a stub of a branch caught the back of his tunic, tearing the cloth and jabbing his back. He almost cried out, and was instantly glad he didn't. Through a wide space between bamboo poles, Azoth saw a man seated at the bar, still drinking. In the Warrens, you had to judge people quickly. Even if you had quick hands like Azoth did, when you stole every day, you were bound to get caught eventually. All merchants hit the guild rats who stole from them. If they wanted to have any goods left to sell, they had to. The trick was picking the ones who'd smack you so you didn't try their booth next time. There were others who'd beat you so badly you never had a next time. Azoth thought he saw something kind and sad and lonely in this lanky figure. He was perhaps 30, with a scraggly blonde beard and a huge sword on his hip. How could you abandon me? The man whispered so quietly, Azoth could barely distinguish the words. He held a flagon in his left hand and cradled something Azoth couldn't see in his right. After all the years I've served you, how could you abandon me now? Is it because of Vonda? There was an itch on Azoth's calf. He ignored it. It was just his imagination again. He reached behind his back to free his tunic. He needed to find his coins and get out of here. Something heavy dropped onto the floor above Azoth and slammed his face into the water, driving the breath from his lungs. He gasped and nearly inhaled water. Why, Durzo Blint, you never fail to surprise. The weight above Azoth said. Nothing was visible of the man through the gaps except a drawn dagger. He must have dropped from the rafters.
Hey, I'm all for calling a bluff.
But you should have seen Vonda when she figured out you weren't going to save her. Made me damn near bawl my eyes out. The lanky man turned. His voice was slow, broken. I killed 6 men tonight. Are you sure you want to make it 7? Azoth slowly caught up with what they'd been saying. The lanky man was the wet boy, Durzo Blint. A wet boy was like an assassin, in the way a tiger is like a kitten. Among wet boys, Durzo Blint was indisputably the best, or, as the head of Azoth's guild said, at least the disputes didn't last long. And I thought Durzo Blint looked kind. The itch on Azoth's calf itched again. It wasn't his imagination. There was something crawling up the inside of his trousers. It felt big, but not as big as a cockroach. Azoth's fear identified the weight, a white wolf spider. The poison liquefied flesh in a slowly spreading circle. If it bit, even with a healer, the best an adult could hope for was to lose a limb. A guild rat wouldn't be so lucky.
Blint, you'll be lucky if you don't cut your head off after all you've been drinking. Just in the time I've been watching, you've had
8 flagons. And I had 4 before that. Azoth didn't move. If he jerked his legs together to kill the spider, the water would splash, and the men would know he was there. Even if Durzo Blint had looked kind, that was an awful big sword, and Azoth knew better than to trust grown-ups.
"You're bluffing," the man said, but there was fear in his voice.
"I don't bluff," Durzo Blint said. "Why don't you invite your friends in?" The spider crawled up to Azoth's inner thigh. Trembling, he pulled his tunic up and back and stretched the waist of his trousers, making a gap and praying the spider would crawl for it. Above him, the assassin reached 2 fingers up to his lips and whistled. Azoth didn't see Durzo move, but the whistle ended in a gurgle, and a moment later, the assassin's body tumbled to the floor. There were yells as the front and back doors burst open. The boards flexed and jumped. Concentrating on not jostling the spider, Azoth didn't move, even when another dropping body pushed his face briefly underwater. The spider crawled across Azoth's butt, and then onto his thumb. Slowly, Azoth drew his hand around so he could see it. His fears were right. It was a white wolf spider, its legs as long as Azoth's thumb. He flung it away convulsively and rubbed his fingers, making sure he hadn't been bitten. He reached for the splintered branch holding his tunic and broke it off. The sound was magnified in the sudden silence above. Azoth couldn't see anyone through the gaps. A few feet away, something was dripping from the boards into a puddle. It was too dark to see what it was.
but it didn't take much imagination to guess.
The silence was eerie. If any of the men walked across the floor, groaning boards and flexing bamboo would have announced it. The entire fight had lasted maybe 20 seconds, and Azoth was sure no one had left the tavern.
Had they all killed each other?
He was chilled, and not just from the water. Death was no stranger in the Warrens, but Azoth had never seen so many people die so fast and so easily. Even taking extra care to look out for the spider, in a few minutes, Azoth had gathered 6 coppers. If he were braver, he would have looted the bodies in the tavern. But Azoth couldn't believe Durzo Blint was dead. Maybe he was a demon, like the other guild rats said. Maybe he was standing outside, waiting to kill Azoth for spying on him. Chest tight with fear, Azoth turned and scooted toward his hole. 6 coppers was good. Dues were only 4, so he could buy bread tomorrow to share with Jarl and Dollgirl. He was a foot from the opening, when something bright flashed in front of his nose. It was so close, it took a moment to come into focus. It was Durzo Blint's huge sword, and it was stuck through the floor all the way into the mud, barring Azoth's escape. Just above Azoth on the other side of the floor, Durzo Blint whispered, "Never speak of this. Understand? I've done worse than kill children." The sword disappeared, and Azoth scrambled out into the night. He didn't stop running for miles.
Chapter 2. 4 coppers! 4! This isn't 4!
Rat's face was so rage-red, his pimples only showed as a scattering of white dots. He grabbed Jarl's threadbare tunic and lifted him off the ground. Azoth ducked his head. He couldn't watch.
"This is 4!
Rat shouted, spit flying. As his hand slapped across Jarl's face, Azoth realized it was a performance. Not the beating, Rat was definitely hitting Jarl. But he was hitting him with an open hand. It was louder that way. Rat wasn't even paying attention to Jarl. He was watching the rest of the guild, enjoying their fear.
"Who's next?"
Rat asked, dropping Jarl. Azoth stepped forward quickly, so Rat wouldn't kick his friend. At 16, Rat was already as big as a man, and he had fat, which made him unique among the slave-born. Azoth held out his 4 coppers.
8, puke!
Rat said, taking the 4 from Azoth's hand.
8? You gotta pay for Dollgirl, too!
Azoth looked around for help. Some of the bigs shifted and looked at each other, but no one said a word.
"She's too young," Azoth said. "Littles don't pay dues till they're 8.
Attention shifted to Dollgirl, who was sitting in the dirty alley. She noticed the looks and withered, shrinking into herself. Dollgirl was tiny, with huge eyes, but beneath the grime, her features were as fine and perfect as her namesake's.
"I say she's 8, unless she says different,"
Rat leered.
"Say it, Dollgirl. Say it, or I'll beat up your boyfriend."
Dollgirl's big eyes got bigger, and Rat laughed. Azoth didn't protest, didn't point out that Dollgirl was mute. Rat knew. Everyone knew. But Rat was the fist. He only answered to Jalaliel, and Jalaliel wasn't here. Rat pulled Azoth close and lowered his voice.
"Why don't you join my pretty boys, Azo? You'll never pay dues again."
Azoth tried to speak, but his throat was so tight that he only squeaked. Rat laughed again, and everyone joined him, some enjoying Azoth's humiliation, some just hoping to put Rat in a good mood before their turn came. Black hatred stabbed through him. Azoth hated Rat, hated the guild, hated himself. He cleared his throat to try again. Rat caught his eye and smirked. Rat was big, but he wasn't stupid. He knew how far he was pushing Azoth. He knew Azoth would crumble, afraid, just like everyone else. Azoth spat a wad of phlegm onto Rat's face. "Go bugger yourself, ratty fatty!" There was an eternity of stunned silence, a golden moment of victory. Azoth thought he could hear jaws dropping. Sanity was just starting to reassert itself when Rat's fist caught him on the ear. Black spots blotted out the world as he hit the ground. He blinked up at Rat, whose black hair glowed like a halo as it blocked the noon sun, and knew he was going to die.
"Rat! Rat! I need you!"
Azoth rolled over and saw Jalaliel emerging from the guild's building. His pale skin was beaded with sweat, though the day wasn't hot. He coughed unhealthily.
"Rat! I said no!"
Rat wiped his face, and seeing his rage cool so suddenly was almost more frightening than seeing its sudden heat. His face cleared, and he smiled at Azoth. Just smiled.
"Hey-ho, J-O," Azoth said.
"Hey-ho, Azo," Jarl said, coming to join Azoth and Doll Girl.
"You know you're about as smart as a box of hair. They'll be calling him Ratty Fatty behind his back for years."
"He wanted me to be one of his girls," Azoth said.
They were propped against a wall several blocks away, sharing the stale loaf Azoth had bought. The smells of baking, though less intense this late in the day, covered at least some of the smells of sewage, rotting garbage piled on the banks of the river, and the rancid bite of the urine and brains of the tanneries. If Siurin architecture was all bamboo and rice fiber walls and screens, Cenarian architecture was rougher, heavier, lacking the studied simplicity of Siurin design. If Alatirin architecture was all granite and pine, Cenarian architecture was less formidable, lacking the deliberate durability of Alatirin structures. If Osaini architecture was airy spires and soaring arches, Cenarian architecture only soared above one story in a few nobles' manses on the east side. Cenarian buildings were everything squat and dank and cheap and low, especially in the Warrens. A material that cost twice as much was never used, even if it lasted four times as long. Cenarians didn't think long-term, because they didn't live long-term. Their buildings frequently incorporated bamboo and rice fiber, both of which grew nearby, and pine and granite, which were not too far away. But there was no Cenarian style. The country had been conquered too many times over the centuries to pride itself on anything but survival. In the Warrens, there wasn't even pride. Azoth absently ripped the loaf into thirds, then scowled. He'd made two about the same size, and one third smaller. He put one of the bigger pieces on his leg and handed the other big piece to Doll Girl, who followed him like a shadow. He was about to hand the small piece to Jarl when he saw Doll Girl's face pucker in disapproval. Azoth sighed and took the small piece for himself. Jarl didn't even notice.
"Better one of his girls than dead," Jarl said.
"I won't end up like Bim."
"Azo, once Jalaliel buys review, Rat'll be our guild head."
You're 11. 5 years till you get review. You'll never make it. Rat'll make Bim look lucky compared to you. So what do I do, Jarl?
Ordinarily, this was Azoth's favorite time. He was with the two people he didn't have to be afraid of, and he was silencing the insistent voice of hunger. Now, the bread tasted like dust. He stared into the market, not even seeing the fishmonger beating her husband. Jarl smiled, his teeth brilliant against his black Ladeshian skin.
If I tell you a secret, can you keep it quiet?
Azoth looked from side to side and leaned in. The loud crunching of bread and smacking of lips beside him stopped him.
Well, I can. I'm not so sure about Doll Girl.
They both turned toward where she sat, gnawing on the heel of the loaf. The combination of the crumbs stuck to her face and her scowl of outrage made them howl with laughter. Azoth rubbed her blonde head and, when she kept scowling, pulled her close. She fought against him, but when he let his arm drop, she didn't scoot away. She looked at Jarl expectantly. Jarl lifted his tunic and removed a rag he'd had tied around his body as a sash.
I won't be like the others, Azo. I'm not just going to let life happen to me. I'm going to get out.
He opened the sash. Tucked within its folds were a dozen coppers, 4 silvers, and impossibly, 2 gold gunders.
4 years. 4 years I've been saving.
He dropped 2 more coppers into the sash.
You mean all the times rats slapped you around for not making your dues, you've had this?
Jarl smiled, and slowly, Azoth understood. The beatings were a small price to pay for hope. After a while, most guild rats withered and let life beat them. They became animals, or they went crazy like Azoth had today and got themselves killed. Looking at that treasure, part of Azoth wanted to strike Jarl, grab the sash, and run. With that money, he could get out, get clothes to replace his rags, and pay apprentice fees somewhere, anywhere. Maybe even with Durzo Blint, as he'd told Jarl and Doll Girl so many times. Then he saw Doll Girl. He knew how she'd look at him if he stole that sash full of life. If any of us makes it out of the Warrens, it'll be you, Jarl. You deserve it. You have a plan?
Always, Jarl said.
He looked up, his brown eyes bright.
I want you to take it, Azo. As soon as we find out where Durzo Blint lives, we're gonna get you out. All right?
Azoth looked at the pile of coins.
4 years. Dozens of beatings.
Not only did he not know if he would give that much for Jarl, but he'd also thought of stealing it from him. He couldn't hold back hot tears. He was so ashamed. He was so afraid. Afraid of Rat. Afraid of Durzo Blint. Always afraid. But if he got out, he could help Jarl. And Blint would teach him to kill. Azoth looked up at Jarl, not daring to look at Doll Girl for fear of what might be in her big brown eyes.
I'll take it.
He knew who he'd kill first.
Chapter 3. Durzo Blint pulled himself on top of the small estate's wall and watched the guard pass. The perfect guard, Durzo thought. A bit slow, lacking imagination, and dutiful. He took his 39 steps, stopped at the corner, planted his halberd, scratched his stomach under his gambeson, checked in all directions, then walked on. 35. 36. Durzo slipped out of the man's shadow and eased himself over the edge of the walkway.
He held on by his fingertips. Now. He dropped and hit the grass just as the guard thumped the butt of his halberd on the wood walkway. He doubted the guard would have heard him anyway, but paranoia begat perfection in the wet boy's trade. The yard was small, and the house not much bigger. It was built on the Siurin design, with translucent rice paper walls. Bald cypress and white cedar formed the doors and arches, and cheaper local pine had been used for the frame and the floors. It was Spartan, like all Siurin houses, and that fit General Aegon's military background and his ascetic personality. More than that, it fit his budget. Despite the general's many successes, King Davin had not rewarded him well, which was part of why the wet boy had come. Durzo found an unlocked window on the second floor. The general's wife was asleep in the bed. They weren't so Siurin as to sleep on woven mats. They were, however, poor enough that the mattress was stuffed with straw rather than feathers. The general's wife was a plain woman, snoring gently and sprawled more in the middle than to one side of the bed. The covers on the side she was facing had been disturbed. The wet boy slid into the room, using his talent to soften the sound of his footsteps on the hardwood floor. Curious. A quick glance confirmed that the general hadn't just come for a nocturnal conjugal visit. They actually shared the room. Perhaps he was even poorer than people thought. Durzo's brow furrowed under his mask. It was a detail he didn't need to know. He drew the short, poisoner's knife and walked toward the bed. She'd never feel a thing. He stopped. The woman was turned toward the disturbed covers. She'd been sleeping close to her husband before he got up, not on the far side of the bed, the way a woman merely doing her marital duties would. It was a love match. After her murder, Aline Gunder had planned to offer the general a quick remarriage to a rich noblewoman. But this general, who'd married a low-born woman for love, would react quite differently to his wife's murder than a man who'd married for ambition. The idiot. The prince was so consumed with ambition that he thought everyone else was, too. The wet boy sheathed the knife and stepped into the hall. He still had to know where the general stood, immediately. "Damn it, man. King Davin's dying. I'd be surprised if he's got a week left." Whoever had spoken was mostly right. The wet boy had given the king his final dose of poison tonight. By dawn, he would be dead, leaving a throne in contention between one man who was strong and just and another who was weak and corrupt. The underworld Sakage was not disinterested in the outcome. The voice had come from the receiving room downstairs. The wet boy hurried to the end of the hall. The house was so small that the receiving room doubled as the study. He had a perfect view of the two men. General Brant Aegon had a graying beard, close-trimmed hair that he didn't comb, and a jerky way of moving, keeping his eyes on everything. He was thin and sinewy, his legs slightly bowed from a life in the saddle. The man across from him was Duke Regnus Gyre. The wing-backed chair creaked as he shifted his weight. He was a huge man, both tall and wide, and little of his bulk was fat. He folded ringed fingers on his belly. "By the night angels, I could kill them both and end the Nine's worries right now."
"Are we deceiving ourselves, Brant?"
Duke Gyre asked. The general didn't answer immediately.
"My lord."
"No, Brant. I need your opinion as a friend, not as a vassal." Durzo crept closer. He drew the throwing knives slowly, careful with the poisoned edges.
"If we do nothing," the general said, "Aline Gunder will become king. He is a weak, foul, and faithless man. The Sakage already owns the Warrens.
The king's patrols won't even leave the main roads, and you know all the reasons that's only bound to get worse. The death games entrenched the Sakage. Alain doesn't have the will or the inclination to oppose the Sakage now, while we can still root them out. So are we deceiving ourselves in thinking that you'd be a better king? Not at all. And the throne is yours by rights.
Blint almost smiled. The Underworld's lords, the Sakage Nine, agreed with every word, which was why Blint was making sure Regnus Gyre didn't become king.
And tactically, could we do it?
With minimal bloodshed. Duke Wesseros is out of the country. My own regiment is in the city. The men believe in you, my lord. We need a strong king, a good king. We need you, Regnus.
Duke Gyre looked at his hands.
And Alain's family? They'll all be part of the minimal bloodshed?
The general's voice was quiet.
Do you want the truth?
Yes.
Even if we don't order it, one of our men will kill them to protect you, even if it meant hanging. They believe in you that much.
Duke Gyre breathed.
So the question is, does the good of many in the future outweigh the murder of a few now? How long has it been since I had such qualms?
Durzo barely stifled an overpowering urge to throw the daggers.
The suddenness of his rage shook him. What was this about? It was Regnus. The man reminded him of another king he'd once served, a king worthy of it.
That's for you to answer, my lord, General Aegon said. But if I may, is the question really so philosophical?
What do you mean?
You still love Nalia, don't you?
Nalia was Alain Gunder's wife.
Regnus looked stricken. I was betrothed to her for 10 years, Brant. We were each other's first lovers.
My lord, I'm sorry, the general said. It's not my...
No, Brant. I never speak of it.
As I decide whether to be a man or a king, let me.
He breathed deeply.
It's been 15 years since Nalia's father broke our betrothal and married her to that dog, Alain.
I should be over it.
I am, except when I have to see her with her children and have to imagine her sharing a bed with Alain Gunder. The only joy my marriage has given me is my son, Logan, and I can scarce believe her own has been better.
My lord, given the involuntary nature of both of your weddings, could you not divorce Katrina and marry...
No.
Regnus shook his head.
If the queen's children live, they will always be a threat to my son, whether I exile them or adopt them. Nalia's eldest boy is 14, too old to forget that he was destined for a throne.
The right is on your side, my lord.
And who knows but that answers unforeseen may arise to these problems once you sit on the throne.
Regnus nodded unhappily, obviously knowing he held hundreds or thousands of lives in his hands, not knowing he held his own as well.
If he plots rebellion,
I'll kill him now, I swear by the Night Angels. I serve only the Sakage now.
And myself?
Always myself.
May generations unborn forgive me, Regnus Gyre said, tears gleaming in his eyes. But I will not commit murder for what may be, Brant.
I cannot.
I will swear fealty.
The wet boy slid the daggers back into their sheaths, ignoring the twin feelings of relief and despair he felt.
It's that damned woman. She's ruined me. She's ruined everything.
Blint saw the ambush from 50 paces away, and walked right into its teeth. The sun was still an hour from rising, and the only people on the twisting streets of the Warrens were merchants who'd fallen asleep where they shouldn't have, and were hurrying home to their wives. The guild,
black dragon from the guild glyphs he'd passed, was hiding around a narrow choke point in the alley where guild rats could spring up to clog both ends of the street and also attack from the low rooftops. He had affected a bad right knee and pulled his cloak tight around his shoulders, the hood pulled low over his face. As he limped into the trap, one of the older children, a big, as they called them, jumped into the alley ahead of him and whistled, brandishing a rusty saber. Guild rats surrounded the wet boy.
"Clever," Durzo said. "You keep a lookout before dawn when most of the other guilds are sleeping, and you are able to jump a few bags who've been out all night whoring. They don't want to explain any bruises from fighting to their wives, so they hand over their coins. Not bad. Whose idea was it?"
"Azoth's," a big said, pointing past the wet boy.
"Shut up, Roth," the guild head said.
The wet boy looked at the smaller boy on the rooftop. He was holding a rock aloft, his pale blue eyes intent. "Ready." He looked familiar.
"Oh, now you've given him away," Durzo said.
"You shut up, too,"
the guild head said, shaking the saber at him.
"Hand over your purse or we'll kill you."
"Jalaliel," a black guild rat said. "He called them bags. A merchant wouldn't know we call them that. He's Sakage."
"Shut up, Jarl. We need this."
Jalaliel coughed and spat blood.
"Just give us your—"
"I don't have time for this. Move," Durzo said.
"Hand it."
The wet boy darted forward, his left hand twisting Jalaliel's sword hand, snatching the saber, and his body spinning in. His right elbow cracked against the guildhead's temple, but he pulled the blow so it wouldn't kill. The fight was over by the time the guild rats flinched.
"I said I don't have time for this," Durzo said.
He threw back his hood. He knew he was nothing special to look at. He was lanky and sharp-featured, with dark blonde hair and a wispy blonde beard over lightly pockmarked cheeks. But he might have had three heads from the way the children shrank back.
"Durzo Plint,"
Roth murmured. Rocks rattled to the ground.
"Durzo Blint!"
The name passed through the guild rats in waves. He saw fear and awe in their eyes. They'd just tried to mug a legend. He smirked.
"Sharpen this. Only an amateur lets his blade rust."
He threw the saber into a gutter clotted with sewage. Then he walked through the mob. They scattered, as if he might kill them all. Azoth watched him stride into the early morning mists, disappearing like so many other hopes into the sinkhole of the Warrens. Durzo Blint was everything Azoth wasn't. He was powerful, dangerous, confident, fearless. He was like a god. He'd looked at the whole guild arrayed against him, even the bigs like Roth and Jalaliel and Rat, and he'd been amused. Amused! Someday, Azoth swore. He didn't quite dare even to think the whole thought, lest Blint sense his presumption. But his whole body yearned for it. Someday. When Blint was far enough away not to notice, Azoth followed.
Chapter 4. The Bashers, guarding the Nine's subterranean chamber, eyed Durzo sourly. They were twins, and two of the biggest men in the Sakage. Each had a lightning bolt tattooed down his forehead.
"Weapons," one said.
"Lefty,"
Durzo said in greeting, removing his sword, three daggers, the darts strapped to his wrist, and a number of small glass balls from his other arm.
"I'm Lefty," the other one said, patting down Blint vigorously.
"You mind?"
Durzo asked.
"We both know if I wanted to kill anyone in there, I could,"
with or without weapons.
Lefty flushed.
Why don't I ram this pretty sword?
What Lefty means is, why don't you pretend not to be a threat and we'll pretend we're the reason?
Bernard said.
It's just a formality, Blint. Like asking someone how they are when you don't care.
I don't ask.
I was sorry to hear about Vonda, Bernard said.
Durzo stopped cold, a lance twisting through his guts.
Really? The big man said.
He held the door open, glanced at his brother. Part of Durzo knew he should say something cutting, or threatening, or funny, but his tongue was leaden.
Master Blint? Bernard said.
Recovering, Durzo stepped into the Nine's meeting room without raising his eyes. It was a place to inspire fear. Carved from black fire glass, a platform dominated the room. Nine chairs sat on the platform. A tenth chair sat above them like a throne. There was only bare floor facing the chairs. Those the Nine interviewed would stand. The chamber was a tight rectangle, but it was deep. The ceiling was so high it disappeared in the darkness. It gave those questioned the feeling of being interrogated in hell. That the chairs, walls, and even the floor were carved with little gargoyles, dragons, and people all screaming did nothing to cool the effect. But Durzo walked in with an easy familiarity. The night held no terrors for him. The shadows welcomed his eyes, hid nothing from him.
At least that much is left me.
The Nine had their cowls on, except for Mama Kay, though most knew there was no hiding their identities from Durzo. Above them, the Shinga, Pondraden, sat in his throne. He was still and silent as usual.
"Is the wife dead?" Corbin Fishhill asked.
He was a fashionable, handsome man with a reputation for cruelty, especially toward those children in the guilds he managed. The laughter his lisp might have provoked somehow dried up under the ever-present malice on his face.
"Things aren't as you expected," Durzo said.
He gave his report briefly. The king would soon die, and the men whom the Sakage had feared would try to succeed him would not press their claim. That left the throne to Aline Gunder, who was too weak to dare interfere with the Sakage.
"I would suggest," Durzo said, "that we make the prince promote General Aegon to Lord General. Aegon would keep the prince from consolidating his power, and if Kalador makes any move—"
The tiny former slave master interrupted.
"While we acknowledge your complaint against Kalador, Master Blint, we aren't to squander our political capital on some general."
"We don't have to," Mama Kay said. The Mistress of Pleasures was still beautiful, though it had been many years since she was the city's most celebrated courtesan. "We can get what we want by pretending someone else asked for it." Everyone stopped and listened. The prince was willing to buy off the general with a political marriage, so we tell him that Aegon's price is a political appointment instead. The general won't ever know, and the prince isn't likely to ask about it.
"And that gives us leverage to reopen the slavery issue," the master said.
"I'll be damned if we turn slavers again,"
another man said. He was a big man gone to fat, with heavy jowls, small eyes, and scarred fists befitting the master of the Sakage's bashers.
"That conversation can wait. Blint doesn't need to be here for that," Corbin Fishhill said.
He turned his heavy-lidded eyes to Blint.
"You didn't kill tonight."
He let the statement hang, unadorned.
Durzo looked at him, refusing to take the provocation.
"Can you still do it?"
The words were useless with a man like Corbin Fishhill. He spoke the language of meat.
Durzo walked to him.
Corbin didn't flinch,
didn't turn aside as Durzo came toward the platform, though several of the nine were clearly nervous. Under Fishhill's velvet trousers, Blint could see his muscles bunch. Corbin kicked at Durzo's face, but Durzo had already moved. He slammed a needle deep into Corbin's calf and stepped back. A bell rang, and a moment later, Bernard and Lefty burst into the room. Blint crossed his arms and made no move to defend himself. Blint was tall, but his mass was all lean muscle and sinew. Lefty charged like a warhorse. Durzo merely extended both hands, unclenched, but when Lefty crashed into him, the impossible happened. Instead of crushing the smaller man, Lefty's sprint ended instantly. His face stopped first, his nose popping against Durzo's open hand. The rest of him continued forward, his body lifted parallel to the ground, then crashed to the stone floor. "Stop!" Corbin Fishhill shouted. Bernard skidded to a halt in front of Durzo, then knelt by his brother. Lefty was moaning, his bleeding nose filling the mouth of a rat carved into the rock floor. Corbin pulled the needle out of his calf with a grimace. "What is this, Blint? You want to know if I can still kill?" Durzo put a small vial in front of the basher. "If that needle was poisoned, this is the antidote. But if the needle wasn't poisoned, the antidote will kill you. Drink it or don't." "Drink it, Corbin," Pondraden said. It was the first time the Shinga had spoken since Blint entered. "You know, Blint, you'd be a better wet boy if you didn't know you were the best. You are, but you still take your orders from me. The next time you touch one of my nine, there will be consequences. Now get the hell out!" The tunnel felt wrong. Azoth had been in other tunnels before, and if he wasn't exactly comfortable with moving through the cloying dark by touch, he could still do it. This tunnel had started out like any other. Rough cut, winding, and of course dark. But as it plunged deeper into the earth, the walls got straighter, the floor smoother. This tunnel was important. But that was different. Not wrong. What was wrong was one step in front of Azoth. He squatted on his heels, resting, thinking. He didn't sit. You only sat when you knew there was nothing you'd have to run away from. He couldn't smell anything different, though the air was as heavy and thick as gruel down here. If he squinted, he thought he could see something, but he was pretty sure that was just from squeezing his eyes. He extended his hand again. Was the air cooler just there? Then he was sure he felt the air shift. Sudden fear arced through Azoth. Blint had passed through here 20 minutes ago. He hadn't carried a torch. Azoth hadn't thought about it then. Now he remembered the stories. A little puff of sour air lapped at his cheek. Azoth almost ran, but he didn't know which way was safe to run. He had no way to defend himself. The fist kept all the weapons. Another puff touched his other cheek. It smells like garlic?
"There are secrets in this world, kid," a voice said. "Secrets like magical alarms and the identities of the Nine. If you take another step, you'll find one of those secrets. Then two nice bashers with orders to kill intruders will find you."
"Master Blint?"
Azoth searched the darkness.
"Next time you follow a man, don't be so furtive. It makes you conspicuous."
Whatever that meant, it didn't sound good.
"Master Blint?"
He heard laughter up the tunnel, moving away. Azoth jumped to his feet, feeling his hope slip away with the fading laughter. He ran up the tunnel in the dark. "Wait!" There was no response. Azoth ran faster.
A stone grabbed his foot and he fell roughly, skinning his knees and hands on the stone floor.
"Master Blint, wait! I need to apprentice with you! Master Blint, please!"
The voice spoke just over him, though when he looked, Azoth could see nothing.
"I don't take apprentices. Go home, kid."
"But I'm different. I'll do anything. I've got money."
But there was no response. Blint was gone. The silence ached, throbbed in time with the cuts on Azoth's knees and palms. But there was no help for it. He wanted to cry, but crying was for babies. Azoth walked back to Black Dragon territory as the sky lightened. Parts of the Warrens were shaking off their drunken slumber. Bakers were up, and smiths' apprentices were starting forge fires, but the guild rats, the whores, the bashers, and the sneak thieves had gone to sleep, and the cutpurses, cons, sharps, and rest of those who worked the daylight were still asleep. Usually, the smells of the Warrens were comfortable. There was the permeating smell of the cattle yards over the more immediate smells of human waste glooping through wide gutters in every street to further foul the Plith River. The rotting vegetation from the shallows and backwaters of the Slow River, the less sour smell of the ocean when the lucky breeze blew, the stench of the sleeping, never-washed beggars who might attack a guild rat for no reason other than their rage at the world. For the first time to Azoth, rather than home, the smells denoted filth. Rejection and despair were the vapors rising from every moldering ruin and shit pile in the Warrens. The abandoned mill here, once used for hulling rice, wasn't just an empty building the guild could sleep in. It was a sign. Mills on the west shore would be looted by those so desperate they'd break past whatever bashers the mill owners hired. It was all garbage and rejection. And Azoth was part of it. When he got to the guild home, Azoth nodded to the lookout and slipped inside with no attempt at stealth. The guild was used to children getting up to piss in the night, so no one would think he'd been out. If he tried to sneak in, he'd just draw attention to himself. Maybe that was what furtive meant. Lying down in his usual spot next to the window, he slipped between Doll Girl and Jarl. It got cold here, but the floor was flat, and there weren't many splinters. He nudged his friend.
"Jao, you know what furtive means?"
But Jarl rolled away, grunting. Azoth poked him again, but Jarl wouldn't move. "Long night, I guess." Like all the guild rats, Azoth, Jarl, and Doll Girl slept close to each other for warmth. Usually, Doll Girl got the middle because she was small and got cold so easy. But tonight, Jarl and Doll Girl weren't lying close to each other. Doll Girl scooted close and wrapped her arms around him, squeezing tightly, and Azoth was glad for her warmth. A worry gnawed at the back of his mind like a rat, but he was too tired. He slept.
Chapter 5. The nightmare started when Azoth awoke.
"Good morning," Rat said.
"How's my favorite little gutter shite?"
The glee on Rat's face told Azoth that something was seriously wrong. Roth and Harelip stood on either side of Rat, almost bursting with excitement. Doll Girl was gone. Jarl was gone. Jalaliel was nowhere to be seen. Blinking against the sunlight streaming through the guild home's torn roof, Azoth stood and tried to orient himself. The rest of the guild was gone, either working, scavenging, or just deciding that now would be a good time to be outside. So they'd seen Rat come in. Roth stood by the back door, and Harelip stood behind Rat in case Azoth ran for the front door or a window.
"Where were you last night?"
Rat asked.
"I had to piss."
"Long piss."
You missed the fun.
When Rat spoke like that, totally flat, no affect in his voice, Azoth felt a fear too deep to shiver out. Azoth knew violence. He'd seen sailors murdered, had seen prostitutes with fresh scars, had a friend die from a vendor's beating. Cruelty walked the Warrens holding hands with poverty and rage. But the dead look in Rat's eyes marked him as more of a freak than Harelip. Harelip had been born without part of his lip. Rat had been born without a conscience. "What did you do?" Azoth asked.
"Roth?"
Rat lifted his chin at the big. Roth opened the door, said, "Good boy," as if speaking into a dog, and grabbed something. He hauled it inside, and Azoth saw that it was Jarl. Jarl's lips were swollen, both eyes black and so big he could barely see through the slits. He was missing teeth, and he had crusted blood on his face from where his hair had been pulled so hard his scalp bled. He was wearing a dress. Azoth felt hot and cold tingles on his skin, a rush of blood to his face. He couldn't show Rat weakness. He couldn't move. He turned so he wouldn't throw up. Behind him, Jarl let out a little whimper.
"Azo, please. Azo, don't turn away from me. I didn't want..."
Rat struck him across the face. Jarl fell to the ground and didn't move. "Jarl's mine now," Rat said. "He thinks he'll fight every night, and he will. For a while." Rat smiled. "But I'll break him. Time's on my side."
"I'll kill you. I swear it," Azoth said.
"Oh, are you Master Blint's apprentice now?"
Rat smiled as Azoth shot Jarl a look, feeling betrayed. Jarl turned his face to the floor, his shoulders shaking as he cried silently.
"Jarl told us all about it. Sometime between Roth and Davy, I think.
But I'm confused.
If Master Blint apprenticed you, why are you here, Azo? You come back to kill me?"
Jarl's tears stilled, and he turned, grasping at straws. There was nothing to say. "He wouldn't take me," Azoth admitted. Jarl slumped.
"Everyone knows he doesn't take apprentices, stupid," Rat said. "So here's the deal, Azo. I don't know what you've done for him, but Jalaliel's ordered me not to touch you, and I won't. But sooner or later, this'll be my guild."
"Sooner, I think," Roth said. He wiggled his eyebrows at Azoth.
"I have big plans for Black Dragon, Azo, and I won't let you get in my way," Rat said.
"What do you want from me?"
Azoth's voice came out thin and reedy.
"I want you to be a hero. I want everyone who doesn't dare stand up to me themselves to look at you and start to hope. And then I will destroy everything you've done. I will destroy everything you love. I will destroy you so completely that no one will ever defy me again. So do your best. Do your worst. Do nothing at all. I win no matter what. I always do."
Azoth didn't pay dues the next day. He hoped Rat would hit him, just once, and he'd be off the pedestal. He'd just be another guild rat. But Rat didn't hit him. He'd raged and swore, his eyes smiling, and told Azoth to bring double next time. Of course, he brought nothing. He merely extended an empty hand as if already beaten. It didn't matter. Rat raged, accused him of defying him, and didn't lay a hand on him. And so it was every Tuesday. Gradually, Azoth went back to work and started accumulating coppers to put in Jarl's pack. The days were awful. Rat didn't let Jarl speak to Azoth, and after a while, Azoth didn't think Jarl even wanted to speak to him. The Jarl he knew disappeared by slow degrees. It didn't even help when they stopped making him wear the dress. The nights were worse. Rat took Jarl every night, while the rest of the guild pretended not to hear.